Welcome to Get Over It, Intuitive Transformation Radio for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We've got a very interesting but fantastic show tonight. We've got Doug Knoll with us, and he's going to talk about his latest book, De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. And guess what, folks? The techniques actually work. So, you know, stay tuned for this one. And sit back, relax, take some notes, and here we go. Now, the information shared on Get Over It, it uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release the energy that is no longer needed. And yes, we're going to help you release the BS that is holding you back. But the real question is, folks, are you really ready to? And by the way, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money Book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. My clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence, but they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist, so whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. Find out more about me and the services I offer by going to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. And I invite you to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn, and you can always sign up for the opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living at MoniqueChapman.com. We live in a socially polarized time as arguments easily flare up, aggression and bullying rise, and ideological lines are drawn, dividing our families, neighborhoods, and communities. De-escalate provides a new set of listening and communication skills that solve the problem of what to do when confronted with an emotionally volatile situation and enables you to restore peace at home, work, or anywhere. My guest this evening, Douglas E. Knoll, is a lawyer turned peacemaker. His calling is to serve humanity, and he executes his calling at many levels. Doug Works carries him into many dark places. However, using pragmatic and practical skills of peace, he helps people resolve deep interpersonal and ideological conflicts. He is an award-winning author of 3 books, a teacher, a speaker, and a trainer. Now, his 4th book is De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less, and you can check him out by visiting his website, and that's DougKnoll.com. I'll spell that DougKnoll.com, and Doug is just back fresh from Amsterdam, where he spoke at a conference, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about that as he joins us. Welcome, Doug. Welcome.
Hi, Monique. Great to be here.
Hi, it's great to have you on. Absolutely enjoyed the book. What was the impetus behind De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less?
Well, as I talk about in the book, I am a co-founder of the Prison of Peace Project. And with my colleague, Laurel Coffer, and I have been training murderers to be peacemakers in California maximum security prisons for the last 7 years. And actually, the project has expanded dramatically internationally, and the next year will be even a huge expansion. But in any event, we take long-termers and lifers and take them through a very rigorous 3-year training process to turn them into powerful peacemakers and mediators within the prison environment. And year after year after year, almost after every class, inmates would come up to me, and they still come up to me, and say, if I'd had these skills 20 or 30 years ago, I wouldn't be in prison right now. The last one to say this was one of the founders of the Aryan Brotherhood, who came up to me a couple of weeks ago and told me that. And yeah, I've trained 2 or 3 of the what they call the council, which is the governing group of the Aryan Brotherhood. I've trained 2 of those guys who are now in their 60s. And they both said, this is transformative work.
Could I ask a question
sure.
about that, though?
Yes.
You trained them with your process, and we'll dig deeper into that. Have they changed their mindset about the overall belief system, or have they changed how they interact within their belief
both.
System? Oh, okay,
both.
Cool. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
next.
We can talk more about that.
Yeah.
It's really quite radical what has happened. Now we're not surprised, but back in 2010 when we started, we were shocked at what we saw in a really excited way. So anyways, these inmates kept coming up to me and saying, if I had learned these skills long ago, I wouldn't be in prison right now. And in my small, dim 50-watt light bulb brain, I finally figured out maybe I ought to write a book about these skills, and instead of just teaching them to inmates, because I had taught them to middle school teachers and high school teachers and professionals, mediators, lawyers, and judges, I thought maybe it's time to write a book that everybody can benefit from that describes these skills in a really simple way and then gives hundreds of examples of how they can be applied in just about every conceivable life situation, from dealing with two-year-olds to all the way up to, you know, dealing with a polarized society. And that's how De-Escalate came about. The book was fast and easy to write because I had so much material to work with. And when Simon & Schuster picked it up, Beyond Words and Simon & Schuster picked it up, they fast-tracked it. They decided that they weren't going to wait the usual 18-month publishing cycle. They published the book from manuscript to publication in 7 months.
Wow.
So the publisher obviously saw the value in this. Yeah, it's been quite a year.
quite a roller coaster ride for you. Now, you just told me before the show that you just arrived back from Amsterdam at The Hague. Tell us about that. What were you doing?
Yes, so I'm a founder and on the board of directors of an international NGO called Mediators Beyond Borders. And basically what Mediators Beyond Borders does is build capacity within communities in various conflict-ridden or post-conflict-ridden places to teach the community members how to resolve conflicts by themselves, how to reconcile ideological, political, tribal, ethnic, religious differences, and help build capacity for peacemaking within communities. That's what Mediators Beyond Borders does. And our annual conference was at The Hague. At the Peace Palace at The Hague, and I was asked to do a day-long pre-conference workshop on Wednesday teaching these de-escalation skills. And I had people from every continent where there's a human being except for the Antarctic and the Arctic. I had people from Africa, Asia, of course, Europe, the United States, North America, probably 20 or 30, I had 43 people in the room, probably had 20 different nationalities and ethnicities.
Wow.
Of all different persuasions, diplomats, lawyers, peacemakers, two people in the peace building work, governmental agencies, you name it. And basically they came because they wanted to learn these de-escalation skills. So I gave my standard day-long workshop and teaching them these skills and how to apply them in the work that they do. And promptly caught the flu and couldn't attend the rest of the conference. Oh, well, I was good enough. I was well enough to make the board meeting, but I showed up for, that's right. Give a little, get a little. So that was my week.
Uh-huh. Well, you've had an interesting week, and I'm so glad that you're back and here joining us to share the information in your book, De-Escalate. Now, folks, we are speaking with Douglas E. Knoll. He is the author of De-Escalate, How the Common Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. Now, Doug, I want to put this out pretty early because I really want the guys in the audience to get it. Well, I say
sure.
guys, I mean men and women. You're
right.
Actually giving away a copy of this book free. Why? And then tell us how to get it.
Sure. There is a benefactor who really supports this work and wants to see this book get into as many hands as possible. So we have a deal to get the book, and you can go to my website, DougKnoll.com, and click on the banner. And if you're willing to pay the basic shipping and handling charge, which is $7, we'll buy the book. And the way it works is that Amazon is listing the book for $11. We have a system set up so that if you pay the shipping charge of around $7, we'll pick up the balance and ship the book to you from Amazon. So you basically get the book for free if you're willing to pay the shipping. And the only reason we're doing that is because we think people ought to have skin in the game. So to get that offer, which is only going to last as long as the money lasts, go to DougKnoll.com, click on the banner, and it'll take you to the order page to get the book for free plus shipping.
Okay.
So, and we've sold about 1,000 books that way, so which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for sharing it with the audience. And I wanted to get that out early so that if people want to download it now and while they're listening along, it's very interesting. It's a very interesting book. Now, you talked about you were the Mediators Without Walls. Exactly what is mediation to make sure that everybody's on the same page?
So there are only four ways to resolve any human conflict. The first way is by coercion, where one person has the power to tell another person what to do. The second way is by using outside authority, where everybody gives their power to an outside authority, which could be a judge or a jury, or it might be two kids going to mom or dad. But that outside authority has the power to make a decision and enforce it on the two parties in conflict. That's the second way. The third way is through mediation. And in mediation, the parties in the conflict agree to step into the power circle, and they bring in an outside person who's a process expert to help them manage a process to de-escalate them and then help them problem solve. The mediator has no power to make a decision, and all the mediator is there to do is to help design and implement and facilitate a process that allows people to have the conversations they can't do by themselves because they're too angry and too escalated. And then the last way that we can resolve conflict is through negotiation, which is the way that we resolve most conflicts. And so mediation is pretty well known in legal circles, but is not well known outside of legal circles. And so what happens today, what I find today, is that people will try, they'll get into a conflict of some kind or another. It could be a divorce, or it could be a business conflict, or any number of different kinds of conflicts. They obviously can't work it out themselves, so they immediately go to coercion by hiring the meanest junkyard lawyer they can find. And after spending, and the lawyer crams this complex interpersonal conflict into a lawsuit and completely abstracts it and files a lawsuit, and people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, and then they're ordered to go to mediation where they settle the case. And what I've been advocating for years is, why not mediate first and then contact a lawyer or hire a lawyer and mediate first, rather than spend all that time and money with lawyers before you've had a chance to mediate. And that idea has not yet percolated into the consciousness of the public. But that's what mediation is. And there are many, many mediators all over the United States, all over North America, where you can find a mediator in just about any community of any size that can help people, that have been trained to help people de-escalate and solve their problems.
Well, it's definitely needed. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about people that I work with and that are going through divorce, especially. And,
right. There you go.
They have the roughest time with the attorneys, because they do have
right.
that dog attorney, if you will. And
that's right.
One side can't talk to the other, not even over, should I pick Johnny
that's
up at
right.
6 o'clock?
That's right. Because the lawyers say don't talk to the other side. Because anything that you say in the middle of a litigation is an admission that can be used against you. And so the lawyers are deathly afraid that people will say things that harm the case from a legal perspective. Well, I mean, I was a trial lawyer for 22 years, and I teach law. I totally get that. Yeah. But the problem is that's destructive of personal relationships. And that's why litigation should be, when the relationship is completely broken down and there's nothing left, and in divorce cases, there's never nothing left, because just because you're ending a marriage, especially if you have children, doesn't mean it's the end of the relationship. It just means the relationship is changing.
Right.
So by going into litigation, you are basically saying there is no relationship here. We are going to let an outside authority make the decisions. We will be bound by those decisions, and we don't care whether the relationship is torn apart forever by that process. But people don't think about that when they're hiring lawyers in family law matters. They think about, I hurt this jerk or jerk, female, woman or man, betrayed me, screwed me, hurt me, all I want to do is hurt back. So I'm going to hire the meanest person I can find, the meanest lawyer I can find, the toughest lawyer, and I'm going to take everything from me and leave nothing for that other person. That is the typical divorce.
Yes, it is. That sounds so horrible.
Now, you can still have that attitude. You can still have that attitude of being hurt and betrayed and angry and just totally pissed off and still wanting to take everything from the person just to get vengeance. You can still do that and go to mediation as long as both sides are willing to step into the power circle and go with the process. And a good mediator will get people calmed down and then help them problem solve and figure out what their choices are and what the consequences of those choices are. And not take away the emotionality, but help people take the problem and put it into a larger perspective and say, okay, your relationship is done. This part of the relationship is done. What kind of a relationship do you want to have in the future? And that's what a mediator can help people reconstruct or create a new reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am glad that you're there in the work that you do. Now, in your book, you talk about you approach de-escalating in a very interesting way. You talk about ignoring the words and guess and or reflect the emotions. So, and I tried it, and I got to be honest, the first couple of times I tried it, I didn't get it. But I kept persevering, and I finally was like, aha, the light came on. So talk to us about that. How can we ignore those words that are so stinging?
Well, let's use some common sense here. If somebody's deeply insulting you or cussing you out, do you really need to listen to those words?
No.
Are you going to miss any meaning there? No. You know what those words are.
Mm-hmm.
You heard them a million times before. So why do we need to listen to them? There is no reason to listen to the words. Ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they are. Who cares? It's just noise.
Okay.
And that's got to be your attitude. When somebody is screaming at me, insulting me, disrespecting me, it's just noise. Why get upset? He's just noisy. I just see a mouth flapping and noise coming out.
Mm-hmm. But what about the tone that comes with the noise? You know, I mean.
So that's what we want to focus on. Okay, so we listen to that tone.
Mm-hmm.
And that tone is angry, it's disrespectful, it's crazy. And that's what we want to pay attention to. What is this person feeling right now? Rather than focusing on the word and trying to defend ourselves, what I say, and this is proven by neuroscience, the only solution. The only way to deal with this is to ignore the words and guess at the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And just start focusing on the emotional experience of the speaker and then reflect back what you think that emotional experience is using a very simple you statement. You are angry. Oh man, you are really pissed off. You are so frustrated. You feel totally betrayed. And no defensiveness. You don't. No explanation. You wouldn't say something like, you feel really betrayed because I did yeah. You wouldn't say that. You would say you just feel really betrayed, not attributing any cause to it. And you just keep repeating and reflecting these emotions for, and it usually takes about 45 seconds, until you see four things, involuntary things happen. One, a nodding of the head. Two, a verbal response like, yeah, goddamn right, I was betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or exactly. Or, and then you'll see a dropping of the shoulders and a big sigh of relief. A release, big sigh. Those are all unconscious. The speaker does not even know that he or she is doing that. But you watch for that. And when you see it, you've de-escalated. Then it's time to stop. Now, I'm curious, in the first couple of times you tried it where you didn't have success,
mm-hmm.
were these low-risk social situations where you had nothing at risk or at stake here, or were they with people that you knew?
People that I knew continued.
Okay.
Pattern of, I shared with you before the show,
yep.
You know, I've got some angry people in my life, and it just wasn't happening, and I'm like, well, okay,
right.
What am I doing wrong?
Okay, so let me just throw this out. As I say in the book and as I teach in my workshops, this has to become part of you. It has to be, in order for this to work really well, it can't be mechanical. It has to be fluid, and it has to be conversational. Like, it's just, you're just throwing these words away. So in order to get that skill, that fluency, you have to practice it a little bit. And what I tell people is, don't do this in high-risk social situations with people you know right away. Start where it's safe. When you're going to Starbucks in the morning to get your latte or coffee, Look at the person at the cash register. Look them in the eye and say, hey, you're really happy today. Reflect back to what you see in them. It's always going to be happiness or excitement or, you know, hey, you look like you're really happy today. You look excited to be here because the Starbucks people are trying to be that way, and they usually are that way. So right. You can do this with positive emotions too. Do that. Do it with the person at the supermarket at the checkout. Hey, you look a little tired today. You look a little frustrated. Or, hey, you look really happy today. You look like you're having a good day. And practice just being conversational with people, and instead of saying words to them like or asking questions like, oh, how are you? Having a good day? Or how's your day going today? Instead of doing that, just reflect back what you pick up from them in terms of their emotions, and do that for a week or two before you start taking on the more intense emotions of angry people around you, because it's got to become fluid. You've got to crawl before you walk and walk before you run.
Okay. Well,
and that's the secret. But it sounds like eventually you got it figured out. You probably got good enough at it where it was a little more conversational, and then you started seeing some results from it.
Yeah. But at first I was, you know, I read the book, put it into action, and, you know, there's a process.
That's right.
And I wasn't going through the process. Okay.
Right. So it's no reflection on the process, because we know from neuroscience why and how this works. It's just a function of getting the skill at a level where it's part of you and it's natural. And when you just reflect back the emotions, it's as if you're just talking to somebody and they don't even pick up on what you're doing. And the workshop I taught last Wednesday at The Hague, I do this in every workshop. We do a lot of interactive work. And so I'm debriefing and talking to people. Well, what was your experience like when you did this? And they'll start people in the audience will start talking. So you felt really happy about that. You were really excited about that. Oh, you felt a little anxious about that. They have no idea that I'm affect labeling them until we get to, and that's what this is called, affect labeling. They have no idea that I was labeling their emotions until we got to the part where I started teaching them about this. And then I said, do you know what I've been doing all day long? And all of a sudden they realize that why they feel so in tune with me is because I've been labeling their emotions all day long.
Yeah. Now okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I was just going to say, and that's how you model it. But that's only because, obviously, I've had a lot of practice at this, and I'm really good at it. And people should never know that you're labeling their emotions. Even when, I mean, my wife and I never argue with each other. We've never had an argument. We always,
really?
We use these. Never. We use these skills and on each other all the time. Not all the time, but when we're a little frustrated or upset or whatever, oh, you're really frustrated right now. Even when somebody is, my wife is using, helping me calm down, she can be using the skill on me. And I'll sort of recognize back in my mind that she's affect labeling, but I'm so grateful that she's listening to me deeply that I don't care. I don't care.
So
I'm welcome
about that. Being heard.
Exactly, at a very deep level. Mm-hmm. Not the words, the emotions.
Right.
People don't want their words to be heard. They want their emotions to be validated.
Okay. Now, in the book, you talk about
big difference.
The nine different affects. So can you run us through the affects so people have an understanding of what you're meaning?
We'll start with the idea of what are emotions. And emotions are social constructs that every culture has its own set of rules around what our emotions are and aren't. So emotions create reality for us. And emotions come from words that describe the internal state of our physical body, and which the brain has these things called interoceptive networks. That's a big word, but basically what it means is the brain is creating a model every moment of what's going on in the body.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that happens in the brain is that if there are certain brain centers that when they activate create a feeling of either pleasantness or unpleasantness, and the feeling of pleasantness or unpleasantness can vary by intensity from very intense to almost non-existent. So we can label within that zone of pleasant, unpleasant, intense versus high intensity versus low intensity, we can describe certain distinct things that happen in the brain. They're not feelings. They're called affect, and they're basically how neural networks that become activated and dominate the overall neural network in the brain. So the affects Now, there's some controversy over how many affects there are, but I take Sylvan Tompkins' model, who was a very brilliant psychologist in the 1960s who started all of this, and he's got 9 affects, and there are 2 positive affects, excitement, and then joy, happiness. So you can be excited or you can have joy, happiness. Then we have neutral, which is surprise or startle. You can be startled or you can be surprised. Those are neutral. And then we have 5 negative affects. And those include, I think I can name them all. So you've got anger, rage, fear, and anxiety. You've got an affect of distress and anguish. You've got shame and humiliation. I may be duplicating some of these. And then you've got disgust. And also there's another one called dismal. So that's 6. So I probably mixed a few up. But these 9 affects, we are basically, if you look at these affects, you go from the pleasant ones, the excitement, happiness, joy, which is pleasant, the neutral ones, which regulate intensity, and then the negative ones, which are all unpleasant. And there are different brain centers that are associated with how that, when combined in different combinations, give rise to these different affects. They will have a certain effect on the overall neural networks in the brain and cause the brain to interiorly represent something as being unpleasant, pleasant, strong versus weak. Now we have to convert that sense into something concrete that can come into consciousness. And that process of concretization is called creating an emotion, an instance of an emotion. And so here's the science. Throughout life, our brain has to learn from experience what things are. Babies are not born with emotions. Babies have no emotions. Infants have no emotions. All they've got is some basic affect. And about the time of 2 years old, their emotional centers, the emotional centers of the brain start to mature, and it's the baby's job from about 2 years old to about 4 years old to learn how his or her culture creates emotion. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we call it the terrible twos, because in order for the baby to have to understand and create emotion, to be able to conceptualize what emotion is, baby has to go through all these experiences. So that's why a two-year-old can be rapturously happy in one moment and be raging crazy in the next, because he or she is experiencing all these different emotions and trying to figure out what it all means. Excuse me. So this is called emotional categorization. We're learning how to take these different affects, categorize them into broad categories such as anger, happiness, joy, frustration, and then fear, and then breaking down these categories into granularize them into more and more detail. The more emotionally granular we are, the more words we have to describe our emotions and the emotions of others, the more emotionally intelligent we are. The less granular, the less emotionally intelligent, and the less categorization we have, the less ability we have to respond to emotional situations with any kind of competency. When people do not have the ability to describe their own emotions, the condition is called alexithymia. Alexithymia. And alexithymia can be a chronic condition, but we see in conflict that when people get really angry, they become alexithymic. They are no longer able to describe their anger. All they feel is this intense, inchoate rage in them, and they can no longer categorize or granularize what they're feeling. So here's what the neuroscience shows us. When we label the specific emotions that we think, we're just guessing here, that we just think the speaker is having in that moment, we are literally lending them our prefrontal cortex to allow them to categorize and granularize that inchoate experience they're having, an emotional experience that they can't articulate, which then allows them to process the information in a completely different way and calms them down almost instantly. And that's the great secret of all of this. And there are brain scanning studies that show how and why this works.
Well, it most definitely works because, again, I've tried it, you know, personally being like a layperson, if you will, and just reading the book and applying it. It definitely works, folks. If you're looking for anything that is going to allow you to de-stress, so to speak, the information and de-escalate will do it. We're speaking with Douglas E. Knoll. The book is De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. You can check out his website, and that is DougKnoll.com, DougKnoll.com. And once you get to that website, you will see a link for a absolute free book. So, you know, click on that. This is a short book. It's an easy read. It might sound a little bit scientific-y, but it's not. The way it's written, it's a very easy read, very easy to digest. And you can apply the information that you receive in real time. So this is a great book, especially for right now. You know, Doug, you know, with this last election that went on, you know, sometimes there's wars within families because people are, you know, either afraid or they can't get their point across, even with political views. How can we utilize the information in De-Escalate to have a true conversation with someone whose political views may differ from ours?
The secret is to not have a need, or if you do have a need, put the need aside for the moment, to have your own political views validated and vindicated. That's the first secret. So you have to be an adult. You have to be a grown-up. that's a little hard for some people.
Yeah.
Then the next step is, if you're talking to somebody who has politically polarized views, very radically different than yours, let's say they're even repellent or repugnant, but you still want to have a conversation with them, de-escalate them first. Get them calmed down by reflecting back their emotional experience. And then you're going to ask some questions. The first question I would always ask somebody who has very different political beliefs than I do is, tell me about all your life experiences that led you to the beliefs that you have today. And it's amazing how when you ask people to think about what life experiences led them to the beliefs they had today, what the stories are that they tell you. And those stories give us great insight and compassion and understanding as to why they think the way they do. And so we can better understand where people are coming from. And it turns out that oftentimes we find there's a lot of common ground. Then the second question I'm going to ask is, how do your beliefs help you? How do they guide you in your everyday life and help you make decisions? And these are not questions that people get asked very often, if at all. So they have to think, well, I've never thought about how my beliefs guide me, but that's all a belief is. A belief is nothing more than a heuristic, a mental shortcut that allows us to make very fast decisions without having to really ponder our way through it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a heuristic. It's the brain's way of saving a lot of metabolism, a lot of overload, a lot of overhead in metabolism to make quick, fast decisions. That's all a belief is. So how does this help you? How does it guide you in your daily decision-making? Then the third question I might ask is, well, we live in a society where there are many different beliefs. How do you personally deal with people who have different beliefs than you do? How do you negotiate that? How do you manage that? And they will, you know, you have an interesting conversation about that. And then the last question I might ask is, how do you think our society should deal with the fact that there are so many different beliefs? Should we just have one belief that is imposed on everybody? Or should we have some other way of managing the fact that there are just so many diverse beliefs that conflict with each other? How should our society manage that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you notice that all of these questions, I never once asked them what their belief was.
Right.
I never once challenged their belief. Mm-hmm. I never argued with them about their beliefs. I never gave them empirical evidence that contradicted their beliefs. I never, ever, ever took them on head on. What I did was engage them in questions that got them thinking about their own beliefs and thinking about how those beliefs were created, how those beliefs help them, how they navigate society and where there are different beliefs, and what they think that a society should be in terms of dealing with these different beliefs. And you would be amazed, Monique, at how much common ground you can find with people who seem to be completely radically opposite of you. You'd be amazed at how much common ground you can find with people when you engage in this kind of questioning, as opposed to, you know, the dogmatic, I'm right, you're wrong, here are the facts, you know, kind of argument that we tend to do, which does nothing but infuriate everybody.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of conversations we need to be having. And we will find that common ground. And we may not agree about the beliefs, but we will certainly agree that we share a lot of common ground. And that's where we start finding the room for problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
So so considering we have radical beliefs around, say, abortion, for example, very controversial, mm-hmm. but we all value the sanctity of life. So what are some of the things we can do with the fact that we all share this value of the sanctity of human life, how do we coexist with each other? How do we manage that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the rare person who will say, well, you can't coexist. You have to die, you know, because only my belief can prevail. Very few people will take that position. Some will.
Yeah.
And so, okay, well, you're entitled to that position.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I totally get it. Thanks. And so I never argue with them. But other people will say, okay, well, I understand. I think I have a better appreciation that the fact is there are people with different beliefs. And maybe being dogmatic makes me feel good, but it may not be practical. And some people will open up to that.
Okay. Well, you know what, Doug? You really need to send your book to Washington, D.C.
Malik, I laugh at that because a lot of people tell me that. And the truth of the matter is, they don't want the book. They wouldn't read it, and even if they read it, they wouldn't apply it.
Yeah,
and here's why. Here's why. It's sad. The reason that we are in the state that we're in today is because the politicians have come to realize over the last couple of generations that the only way to get into power and hold on to it is through fear and polarization. And if fear worked in the last election and polarization worked in the last election, if we amp it up in the next election, we'll even get more power because we'll isolate more and more people who will vote for us. And then when we get into power, we gerrymander the election districts to make sure that only the most radical people get elected. I mean, look at right now. I mean, you look at the Republican Party, for example. This crazy man out of Alabama got elected to the Senate. I mean, Roy Moore. He was the Supreme Court justice, removed twice by the ethics board of the Alabama State Bar, whatever their judicial watchdog is. He believes that the Bible trumps the Constitution. And although I can certainly respect his faith traditions, that is blatantly opposite to what the Founding Fathers tried to create in separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's basically saying, I mean, he's no better than a Muslim fundamentalist who's saying that Islam dictates government. Roy Moore is saying radical Christianity trumps government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people, what we're seeing is that if you are partisan and you are tribalizing people and you are creating extremism in beliefs and you're a politician and you continue to cater that, if you're a moderate, you're going to get thrown out. And only the most extreme people are going to get voted in. And that's the danger of all of this. And that's what the politicians have created, thinking that this is the way they're going to garner power unto themselves so that they can govern. Well, of course, the Republicans have demonstrated they can't govern effectively so far. But I don't think the Democrats would be a whole lot better. But that's a problem of where we are with politics. So people say, send de-escalate to Congress, make everybody read it, make Trump read it. I said, no, they don't want to. They're not interested.
Yeah, they're
because
happy
it flies in the face of what the strategy they're using to gain and maintain power.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that – hold on, let me just – since
yeah,
that, let me close the thought out by saying this. Where does that leave us as a nation? Where it leaves us as a nation is we cannot look to our political leaders to de-escalate an angry society. We have to do it ourselves. And the power of this book is that any person who wants to can learn these skills by reading the book. I've got an online workshop. however you need to do it. Read the book, take the workshop, practice the skills, teach other people how to do this, and start with the families and then work into the neighborhoods, faith communities, municipalities, and just start at the grassroots level. We have seen 30 inmates in a prison within a year take a violent prison and turn it into a peaceful prison.
That can be done.
Of a prison of 3,000 inmates, it only takes less than 0.1% of the people with the skills, practicing the skills on a daily basis to calm everybody down around them. And it spreads like a virus.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
It is amazing.
I don't know if people have noticed listening to the radio show, but just listening to you talk and the words that you use, it's a calming effect. You apply what you do very well across all spectrums. Now, I'd like to really delve in real quick to the Aryan Brothers story that you alluded to earlier.
Oh, sure.
How did you help
them? Well, you know, when you're working with lifers and murderers, you run across all kinds, right? Mm-hmm. From the hardest core gangbangers to all sorts. And we never know who's going to show up in our class because it's self-selecting. People just come because they prison of peace and they're kind of interested in what that is. And some guys come in because they think it's faith-based, and other guys come in because they don't know what it is, but it sounds attractive. And over the years, we've attracted a couple of guys in different prisons, both of whom turned out, we didn't know this, but both of them turned out who to be the founders of the Aryan Brotherhood. And we had exactly the same, and they're older. I mean, they've been in prison for 40 years or so. Mm-hmm. And they have some really crazy, insane stories to tell. But they have learned that violence is not the answer. They thought violence was the answer when they were young men, mm-hmm. but now they have learned that violence is not the answer. And so when we came into the prisons where they were to teach people how practical skills for stopping violence, how to stop two guys who are about to kill each other, how to get them calmed down, solve the problem, and end the fighting, how to stop a gang riot, how to stop racism or the effects of racism, that's what we teach these guys how to do. And so they took to it, and they have both become two of our most powerful mediators in prisons. One guy is being taken by the state and is moving around dealing with gang problems using the skills we've taught him because he's got the credibility to walk into a gang situation where two gangs are opposing each other and get the leaders aside and talk them down.
Wow. That's
it's powerful.
Yeah.
So, amazing. I mean, think about it. If we could take somebody who's a founder of the Aryan Brotherhood, now they've changed their ways, and they're in their 50s and 60s. But teach them skills that really work, and now they're using their skills and their street cred to stop gang riots. What do you think the normal person can do with these skills?
Oh, they can do anything that they want. It's just a matter of embracing it. So we can change.
Right.
We can shift the energy and spite.
Absolutely.
We don't have to stay polarized as we are now.
And we don't have to be victims of polarization.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason for anybody to feel victimized by Trump or by the Democrats or by anybody else. There's no reason to feel that way. Learn the skills on how to calm people down, de-escalate, and all of a sudden you will become deeply empowered and transformed. And I will also say that as a practitioner of these skills, this is a spiritual practice too. Because when you engage in affect labeling, when you're really focused on you, the speaker, and listening to those emotions, something really wonderful and transformative happens to you. Your ego drops out.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you feel this transcendent oneness with the other person, a connection that is deep and ineffable and transcendent. It's what Eckhart Tolle calls the presence of now, the power of now. And you can he never tells you how to get there in all his books, right? He just describes it.
Okay.
But if you experience, and I just stumbled on this, I just started experiencing this and said, wow, what's going on? But if you practice it in the way that I teach in the book, ignore the words, pay attention to the emotions, guess at what the emotional experience is, reflect the emotions using a you statement, not an I statement, and no questions, you will feel during the time that you're doing this a transcendence, a oneness that is like a deep spiritual experience. It happens every time. I don't know if you've experienced it yet. But pay attention. Next time you affect label somebody who's really angry, just at a meta level, just sort of, what am I experiencing right now? And you will experience, hey, I'm egoless. Mm-hmm. And once you become egoless, you are so powerful because nothing can touch you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nothing can touch you.
It's awesome when you feel that. Now, how do you work with your program with people or children who have autism or Asperger's or some other type of disability that affects how they interact in the world?
We have found that these skills work beautifully with children who are challenged by conditions such as autism or Asperger's. It also works with older people who suffer from Alzheimer's or dementia. Somehow, they are reached from very young to very old. They are reached at a very deep level when we reflect back what we think their emotional experience is. Mm-hmm. I just got an email a couple of days ago from a woman who purchased the book who said, "You cannot believe how powerful this was when I did this with my Alzheimer's mother. We've never been so, she can barely remember anything, but I didn't say anything but label her emotional experience, and we were never so deeply connected as we were in those moments." And tears came to her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the same thing with kids. I mean, I get emails from people saying, "I've got an Asperger's kid, I've got a kid with autism," and I label the emotions, what I think his or her experience is, and they respond to it beautifully. So it's very powerful.
Okay.
Very powerful. So, we just have to have the courage to do it. That's the real secret.
Yeah, and take the time. I mean, the time to learn a new skill and invest in yourself. I call it a personal investment because you're enriching
It's not that big a deal. Think about how long it takes to have a normal argument with somebody. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes maybe? Plus there's all the lingering crap that you have to recover from. So imagine being able to stop that argument with, no big deal. Instead of 5 to 10 minutes of arguing and then holding hours, if not days, of bitterness and upset afterwards.
Yeah.
So which would you rather do? Get it over with in 45 seconds or 90 seconds and be happy? Or go on, slop around in the mud for 10, 15 minutes and then still have the mud sticking to you for another week?
Yeah, I think the 90 seconds works well. That way you can
exactly.
Release it and move on. You know?
And you're done.
Yeah.
Move on.
No need to hold on. Doug, boy, our time has gone so quickly here. Folks, we've been speaking with Douglas E. Knoll. He's the author of Deescalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. Check out his website, DougKnoll.com. That's DougKnoll.com. When you're there, you can get the free book. Get the book. It's a free investment, okay? You're investing in yourself. You're investing in your family. You're investing in the world. You're investing in humanity. It will help you. Doug, in our few seconds that are left, what words of wisdom would you like to impart to our audience this evening?
I would say that, for over 2,000 years, we have been slaves to the idea that reason is the way to solve problems. And it turns out that all those philosophers were just dead wrong. Neuroscience is proving that we are emotional beings, not rational beings. We do have the ability to be rational at times, but it's a bounded rationality. And we do have to learn and learn critical thinking, and those skills are all important, learning logic and linear thinking and problem solving. But before we can apply any kind of problem solving or rational thinking to any kind of problem, we have to recognize that we are emotional first. So learning the skills of de-escalation is a fundamental human skill that we all must learn and master, and we must teach to our children if we want to have any hope for a peaceful, beautiful world of coexistence with everybody into the future. Even though we might radically disagree with each other, that doesn't mean that we have to be angry with each other, or at least angry for very long. All we need to do is listen to each other's emotions, reflect them back, and we will find ourselves living in a really magical place.
Well, folks, you heard it. Very magical place. Doug, thank you very much for being with me. The audience, thank you.
You're welcome.
Very much for being with me. The divine in me honors the divine in you. And I'm really happy that we collectively were able to get over it and de-escalate anger. We have the tools now, so go get the book. And if you're ready to live a more balanced life, you can call me for a consultation. If you mention the radio show, there is a 10% discount. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. And make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. consider making the masterful choice of love. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.